Brahma has just described to Narada the creation of the universe, and it's not the first time that it's described, but it's the first time that the Bharata Purusha has been described. In the first canto, at the end of the second chapter, also the Purusha avatars have been described, and how the Lord expands and creates the universe. But here, much more detail has been given, especially the Lord's manifestation as the Bharata Rupa, the Bharata Purusha, by which he is glorified by all the demigods in the Purusha Shukta, the Rig Veda mantra, prayers. And at the end of this section, from text 16 to 22, Lord Brahma has explained, just before that he's explained that everyone exists, everything, every person exists within this Bharata Purusha. There is no existence in the material world that's external to it. But this Bharata Purusha, which contains all the varieties of the material world, all the different types of entities, from Brahma himself to Shiva, to the Charanas, the Yakshas, the Apsaras, the Rakshasas, they all exist within the Lord. And his form is only 9 inches at most. And he is beyond, he is transcendental. He is not of this world. He is unlimited, and the finite but incredibly vast material world exists all within him, effortlessly. It is manifest from him. So this is God. I told you already about that that Guru Maharaji, that Prabhupada was criticized and called a dog and a cheater. And he actually said, when the reporters asked, I told you about that, yes, that there was a press conference. And then and Prabhupada said, but Krishna is the best of cheaters. And later on, quite soon actually, he married his beautiful he was an Indian fellow, this Guru Maharaji, and he married his beautiful young Western secretary. And then his mother, who was saying that he is God, and he had an older brother who was Balaram. He was Krishna, and his older brother was Balaram. So then, after he married his secretary, very beautiful. Then the mother rejected him and said, he's no longer God. Now the older brother is God. And he lost everything at that time, right after. It was within months after Prabhupada said, but Krishna is the greatest cheater. So it's important to understand what God actually is, so that we don't become cheated into accepting something that is insignificant as the supreme, or as Prabhupada would strongly criticize the concept of Dridra Narayan. What does that mean? That God has Narayan serve humanity, which is a legitimate concept. It may not be the highest, but then to say that humanity is Narayan, God, but in a poor form, it is philosophically contradictory. Look what God is. Look what Narayan is. Look who he is. Look what he's the source of. All wealth comes from him. Can he be poor? Is it possible? Is it conceivable? No. So it is a ridiculous, absurd, philosophical concept, this Dridra Narayan. And yet so many people were accepting it because of lack of transcendental knowledge. And thereby, becoming confused, misled, and not taking to devotional service, which is the natural outcome of understanding how great God actually is. Because as soon as we understand the greatness of God, what is the thing that we immediately understand? Yes, how tiny we are. We can walk around thinking we are very wonderful. I've just done this, I've just done that. But as soon as we understand what great actually is, then we can't think ourselves great. So therefore, we agree with the followers of the Prophet Muhammad who say, Allah Akbar, and that God is great, there is one God, and He is great. No disagreement on that. So Brahma continues. So included in that statement is God is great and I am insignificant. So we can say that, but for how long can we actually feel that, feel myself insignificant? How long can I do that? The longer I'm able to do that allows me to actually surrender and take shelter of Krishna, even though working in this world. Being instrumental, praying, as Prabhupada translated, his first translation of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra was, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, O Srimati Radharani, Hare Krishna, please engage me in your service. I want to serve you. I'm tired. I'm weak from trying to put myself forward as powerful. I'm tired of the pretension of trying to convince someone else that I can be the pati, their protector, and I can complete what they lack. I'm tired of this. Now, please allow me to serve you. Gone immediately, illusion. Please protect me. I'm depending upon you. Goltripte varanam tata. Immediate surrender. This is the message of the Bhagavatam, and this message will carry us, beginning with understanding this Sambandha Gyan, beginning with understanding how great God is and how tiny we are. This will carry us, the Bhagavatam will carry us and elevate us up to the point which is revealed in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, up to the point of understanding the possibilities of intimacy that one can awaken with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Right up to that point, Sambandha Gyan includes also our relationship with Him. Because we are not the body. That is called Vyatirek, a negative definition. Just like I can say, my shudder is not green. So that is defining the color of the chatta, but in a negative way. But what color actually is it? What is it? It doesn't speak of that. So similarly, we say that we are not our body, and that is something, it is true, Vyatirek definition of what we are, but it is not, doesn't tell much detail about what we are. And what are we? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained, Gopi Bharta Parakamalayo Dasa Dasa Nadasa. Or a more general statement, Jivera Swarup, Swarup, our own rupa, our own form, our own identity, Jivera Swarup Hoy, is Krishner, of Krishna Nityadas, the eternal servant of Krishna. This is who we are. And the Bhagavatam will take that and give us all the information required to develop our relationship with Krishna to the fullest extent. So at the end of the last section, it described who this Krishna, who this Vasudev, Lord Narayan is, who this Purusha avatar is, Gobadakshai Vishnu, the second of the Purusha avatars, who the entire universal form is coming from, that he is God, and what are his qualities, begin in text 16, that although this is happening, that everything is coming from him, he is only 9 inches as the super soul, just small size, obviously completely transcendental. Because how could unlimited universes fit in something that is, or come from something only 9 inches in height? So we're getting immediately right here the beginning of the concept of transcendental body, some body that's personal. But his body is unlike our bodies, completely full of power. Because our concept of God, I've recently heard a tape where Prabhupada, a conversation where Prabhupada is talking with this scientist in Geneva, who's very, very spiritual, very rare type of a person. And Prabhupada, he listened to him quite a bit, and many of his concepts that he was putting forward to Prabhupada were quite wonderful, that materialism cannot satisfy a living entity. This world needs a spiritual revolution. He was saying that we're ultimately spiritual in nature. But of course, he did not understand that the absolute truth was ultimately a person. So every time Prabhupada tried to put, and Prabhupada tried many times to put this concept forward, it was just so difficult to understand for the man. So difficult. He was so intelligent. And he had perceived so much truth in this world, but it was just so difficult for him to understand, accept that the absolute truth can be a person. Is a person. He has an impersonal feature. Because why is it difficult? Because how is it possible? It is inconceivable for the finite mind that the whole universe, why this universe, so many universes with all its variety can fit in a form of 9 inches. Very difficult to impossible to understand through an ascending process, through our own abilities and intelligence. And of course, intelligent persons get attached to the realizations they have gained through their intelligence. But they have to be taken and put aside or put into the perspective of what the Bhagavatam says and what the great acharyas have said. So we learn about Krishna, yes. But Krishna, at the age of 3 months, he kills Putana, a great Rakshasi. And he lifts Govardhan Hill and just a boy. And he dances with the gopis and he plays with his friends. And none of these activities have anything to do with the material world. Why? And on one conversation I heard this morning, Prabhupada was talking to some professors in Perth, actually Australia, and he was saying about God that... I can't remember what he was saying. That means I should continue with the verses instead of just keep talking about everything. But Prabhupada was explaining how powerful and why he shouldn't... the person was saying about that it wasn't logical that every living entity had a father, and Prabhupada was pushing the point that every living entity has a father, a person that he comes from. Why isn't that? How could it be that there is no supreme person? So the professor asked, then who is the father of that supreme person? And Prabhupada said, that is the definition of God. You trace back the fathers one after another, and when you find someone who has independent existence, that his being, his essence, doesn't depend upon anyone else, that is God. Janmad yasya yataha. Everything else has its birth from him. But very difficult to even understand that. What to speak of lifting Govardhan Hill? What to speak of walking around the fields of Vrindavan herding cows as if a village boy? So one has to gradually purify the heart, increase one's understanding. One has to gradually fall in love with this Supreme Personality of Godhead through surrender. So here, this knowledge, what Brahma is just about to explain, that we heard yesterday, explains his position. He is the controller of immortality and fearlessness. Before he can control fearlessness for us, we have to understand how great he is and learn what it is to surrender to him. And there only can we find fearlessness, not by making any material arrangement. Because in this world, everyone is so fearful for good reasons. Because we're holding on to things that are not ours, that we cannot keep, including our bodies. Naturally, we're fearful. Naturally, we feel insecure in this world. So if we know the glories of Krishna, it is difficult, as Brahma says in 18, to measure the glories of the Supreme Person. Why is it difficult? Yeah. How could you measure something that is unlimited and increasing, such as Krishna's glories? Very difficult. And then Brahma explains Narada to Narada further. He's the reservoir of all material opulence by the one-fourth of the material creation. Deathlessness, fearlessness, again, fearlessness in 19, and freedom from the anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, not in this world, which is beyond the three higher planetary systems and beyond the material coverings, which were just described as part of the Virata Rupa, the three planetary systems. Everything was situated on him. But where we are meant to go, his realm is beyond that. The spiritual world is three-fourths. This material world is unlimitedly vast. But it is just a fragment of the spiritual world. And who goes to the spiritual world? Those who go there are never reborn. Who stays here in the material world, that place, anitya asukaloka? What does anitya asukaloka mean? Do you know? It's not eternal. Asuka, not a happy place. So who stays within these worlds? Those who are attached to family life. Why does one stay in the material world if one is attached to family life? Because that's what one desires. One has attachments in that way, so one has to stay to fulfill those desires. And those who do not strictly follow vows of celibacy, because that fixes one in the bodily concept of life. One becomes one's mind, practically speaking. So those kind of people, and one's body. Why? Because it's one's desires. They must live within the three material worlds. So he, as text 21 describes, Brahma describes, he is the ultimate master of both nescience and factual knowledge of all situations. From that personality of Godhead, all the universal globe, all the universes and the universal form with all material elements, qualities, and senses, everything is generated from him. This is God. Yet he is aloof, separate from all material manifestations. This is God. Like the sun, which is separate from its rays and its heat. So now we'll start the verses we are meant for today. So Brahma starts speaking. When I was born from the abdominal lotus flower of the Lord, Mahavishnu, from Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who was born of Mahavishnu, not born of, but as an expansion of Mahavishnu, the great person, Mahavishnu, the great person, I had no ingredients for sacrificial performances except the bodily limbs of the great personality of Godhead. So Brahma is speaking. He's found himself after his birth and in an awkward position, and this parallels a devotee's awkward position, because life is meant for sacrificing or giving to the Lord. So we'll read from 23 to 27. Srila Sridhar Swami has recommended we read these verses together, and then we'll read the purports. So Brahma continues, for performing sacrificial ceremonies, one requires sacrificial ingredients, such as flowers, leaves, and straw, along with the sacrificial altar and a suitable time, spring. Other requirements are utensils, grains, clarified butter, honey, gold, earth, water, the Rig Veda, Yajurveda, and Samaveda, and four priests to perform the sacrifice. So these are the requirements to make sacrifices. And of course, in Prabhupada's purport to that, to text 25, he explains that in Kali Yuga, there is one sacrifice that is recommended. One cannot gather the ingredients, nor does one have the priests required to properly perform the Vedic sacrifices, which are meant to please the Lord. So what is the one sacrifice recommended to please? The Sankirtan Jagya, to chant Krishna's names. And everyone, regardless of their age, their race, their this, the that, their intelligence, as Prabhupada explained in the first the Happening album, where he chanted Hare Krishna in 1967, perhaps, or 66, he explained that even a dog can participate. So it's so inclusive, and it's not restrictive either, in the sense that one person could be a beginner and be chanting on a beginner level, and another person could be exalted Vaishnava and chanting on a still higher level, and everyone could be participating together, regardless of what level they are. So how wonderful is this Sankirtan Jagya? Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Therefore, Mahaprabhu has said, let the Sankirtan movement, the chanting of the holy names of Krishna, be victorious always in this world. And thereby, everyone will benefit. So Brahma continues, explaining his situation. Other necessities, including invoking the different names of the demigods by specific hymns and vows of recompense, and according with the particular scriptures for specific purposes and by specific processes. So nothing was available when he wanted to perform sacrifices to please the Lord at the beginning of the creation. This is before the actual physical creation was manifest. Thus, in text 28, Brahma says, thus I had to arrange all these necessary ingredients and paraphernalia of sacrifice from the personal bodily parts of the personality of Godhead. So he took everything required to perform the sacrifice from the universal form of the Lord, from the Vishwarupa. By invocation of the demigods' names, the ultimate goal, Vishnu, was gradually attained, and thus compensation and ultimate offerings were complete. Thus I created the ingredients and paraphernalia for offering sacrifice out of the parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, the enjoyer of the sacrifice, and I performed the sacrifice to satisfy the Lord. So what is the meaning of Brahma's statements. What is he telling us? That we are in an awkward situation in the material world. Because here we are, the material world has a twofold purpose. For the non-devotees, it has the purpose of giving them the facilities that they want for enjoyment, whatever those facilities are based on their desires. And for the devotees, it gives another kind of an opportunity, a facility. It gives the opportunity that one can make advancement from the position of sadhana to the position of sadhya. Kriti sadhya bhavetsa sadhanadabhi. Nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatam prakatam riddhi sadhyata. To progress. So here one is in the material world and we want to make sacrifices and offerings to God and thereby progress. What progresses? What is the progress that one makes from sadhana to sadhya? It is from the very early stages of devotional service up to the stages of bhava. That is the progress that is made. The progress is not necessarily in the quantity of service, not necessarily, it depends what Krishna wants, but the progress is in the devotion. From sadhana bhakti to sadhya or bhava, the goal. The progress that we want to make is devotional. And that will allow us to leave this world. It will cleanse the heart. So the predicament of the living entity who wishes to progress devotionally is that I want to sacrifice or give things to Krishna with devotion, but there is nothing separate from him. So what can I give him? What can I offer? But the key in understanding this is that what we really offer is the devotion, ourselves. With devotion, we act. And that is what Krishna wants, and that is what will satisfy Krishna. But yet, the puzzle still exists. What can I offer to Krishna who already owns everything? I remember in one of the first examples I learned when I began chanting Hare Krishna was from Rupanuga Prabhu, and he was, when he was preaching to me, he said, he gave an example of a father who is wealthy and he gives his son some money. And one of the sons that he gives money to, as most sons would do, will naturally just go buy things for themselves so that they can have some pleasure. After all, it's the father's desire that the son be pleased, so he gives them some money. So one son goes and buys so many things for himself. But another son takes that money and out of appreciation for the generosity of his father, he takes that money and buys a gift, buys something to present to his father. So what does the father say when he receives that gift? Does he say, you foolish boy, I could have bought 100 of these. Does he think like that? I gave you this money and you're giving something back to me? No, he doesn't think like that at all. But rather, he's so appreciative. What is he appreciating? He's not appreciating the gift, so to speak, because it's true, he could have bought 100 of them. But he's appreciating the mood, the attitude of devotion and appreciation that the son has. So Brahma, naturally, such an exalted Vaishnava, wants to make offerings, and he saw his situation is that I can only offer that which the Lord has created already through the Vishwarupa. But then, interestingly enough, the sacrifice, Thus I created the ingredients and paraphernalia for offering sacrifice at parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, who is the enjoyer of the sacrifices. And then Brahma manifests the material world for the purpose of creating ingredients that can be sacrificed for the Lord and used in his service. And that is actually the reason why the material world exists, or one of the reasons. To give an opportunity for those who wish to be devotees, who wish to develop the right attitude and relationship to the all-great Supreme Lord that we just heard about, to have things to manifest their devotion, to create opportunities to not use the things of the material world for their own pleasure. And the temptation is always there to take that which is meant for sacrifice, to be meant to offer to Krishna, who everything is coming from, who empowers Brahma to create the material world for the purpose of sacrifice. The temptation, the tendency is always there to use these things in our own service. But as one's devotion increases, naturally the tendency, devotion means love. So naturally the tendency to want to present the beloved with objects and things for his enjoyment, that increases still further. And we saw with Prabhupada, his mood was actually incredible when it came to this point. It was incredible. It was his mood that was incredible, not just what he did. That was amazing and wonderful. But you can say that that Bill Gates did something still more wonderful on the external level. He created an organization that has how many billions of dollars? That's his personal wealth, I think, and that's when the market went down. But such a huge organization that he created that made Prabhupada's organization look very small. So what is the real wonderful thing that Prabhupada did was that external thing that he did, which was very awe-inspiring, but it was a product of the most incredible kind of devotion that was obsessed with using everything in Krishna's service, sacrificing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And his ambition in this sense was unlimited. Unlimited. One time, even in 1966, when he was in New York, there was a concert recital. Someone was playing, some musician who was coming to the temple invited Prabhupada to go to a very famous hall in New York, Carnegie Hall. And Prabhupada actually went, and it was the most peculiar recital. He would bang on the keys of the piano. Very, very peculiar. And later on, the devotees asked Prabhupada why he went. And Prabhupada explained that he was thinking of using that big hall as a temple, and he wanted to see what it looked like. It was so famous. And he would dream. He would look at the big buildings in New York, and he would dream that, oh, we will have a press as big as that, as the Jehovah's Witnesses watchtower printing press. And he chastised me when I mentioned we're not interested in money. And he once said there was a picture of Ramakrishna when someone's offering him money, and he's going like this. And Prabhupada said, you can take a picture of me when someone is offering us more, because all these things are Krishna's. They're created for the sacrifice, to be used in Krishna's service. But, it has to be done by the individuals with devotion, And it cannot be done, oh, just because I'm doing the externals, therefore I'm sacrificing it properly. The devotion must be developed, and one must withdraw from the tendencies to take percentages for himself from the sacrifice that is being made. And as one's devotion increases, that's very natural. And when before one has great devotion, one can't do anything about it, perhaps. One needs to take something for himself. But we should know what really is required and what devotion really is. And how does Srila Rupa Goswami describe devotion, define devotion? Anya bilasita sunyam. That means sunya, means zero. Any other desires other than pleasing Krishna, anyabilas, any other desires become other than pleasing Krishna become zero. Anukulena Krishna Shilanam Bhakti. Just for Krishna's pleasure. And that's what's described in the Bhagavatam. And that's the standard of devotion that is described to the most incredible limits in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the residents of Vrindavan. They don't know anything but pleasing Krishna. They don't have the slightest tinge of any other desire. They are willing to suffer millions of years in hell that Krishna will avoid one bit of pain. They're thinking all day long, what happens if Krishna, while walking in the forest, steps on a stone? And that's causing them grief. That is Bhagavad Dharma. And that's when we describe what bhakti is in a class many weeks ago. We came up with definitions, and one of them was prema dharma. That's what bhakti is. It's when one's love for Krishna develops to the degree that it is real love. It is prema bhakti. And that's what the Bhagavatam leads us to do. And here we're taking primary steps. We have to understand that God is great, and we have to make sacrifices to him. And that's the purpose of the world, to provide ingredients that we can offer to Krishna, but with devotion. Asnami paratatmana. That gives Krishna the bhakti paritam, the bhakti by which something is offered. That gives him the appetite. Let me complete the verses now, and then we'll read Prabhupada's purports. We'll read this one to 28 now, the purport, Prabhupada's purport. People are anxious. People in general are always anxious to have peace of mind or peace in the world. But they do not know how to achieve such a standard of peace in the world. Such peace in the world is obtainable by performance of sacrifice and by practice of austerity. In the Bhagavad Gita 5:29, the following prescription is recommended. And it's interesting because this is a very famous verse. But it's interesting to hear Prabhupada's translation of it here in this context. Bhoktaram jagatapasam savaloka maheshwaram. Suridam savabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati. The karma yogis know that the Supreme Lord is the factual enjoyer and maintainer of all sacrifices and of the austere life. They also know that the Lord is the ultimate proprietor of all the planets and is the factual friend of all living entities. Such knowledge gradually converts the karma yogis into pure devotees of the Lord through the association of unalloyed devotees, and thus they are able to be liberated from material bondage. Brahma, Prabhupada continues, The original living being within the material world taught us the way of sacrifice. The word sacrifice suggests dedication of one's own interests for the satisfaction of a second person. That is the way of all activities. Every man is engaged in sacrificing his interest for others, either in the form of family, society, community, country, or the entire human society. But perfection of such sacrifices is attained when they are performed for the sake of the Supreme Person, the Lord. Because the Lord is the proprietor of everything, because the Lord is the friend of all living creatures, and because he is the maintainer of the performer of sacrifice, as well as the supplier of the ingredients of sacrifices, it is he only and no one else who should be satisfied by all sacrifices. The whole world is engaged in sacrificing energy for advancement of learning, social upliftment, economic development, and plans for total improvement of the human condition. But no one is interested in sacrificing for the sake of the Lord, as advised in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, there is no peace in the world. If men at all want peace in the world, they must practice sacrifice in the interest of the Supreme Proprietor and Friend of all. That was Prabhupada's message to the world in a brief form. Therefore, he wasn't interested in creating technicians or factory workers, but he really wanted to inspire devotees, followers, who would preach this message throughout the world and perform this Sankirtan Jagya. That's what his real interest was. Not that he was against economic development and this and that and making a culture, even within his International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but this is the main thing, or the essential point of what his desire was, that people would be interested, inspired to preach this message throughout the world. Text 29. My dear son, Narada, Narada is that son of Brahma. Thereafter, your nine brothers, who are the masters of living creatures, perform the sacrifice with proper rituals to satisfy both the manifested and non-manifested personalities. So those nine brothers of Narada Muni are Marichi, Atri, these are the mental sons born out of Brahma's mind, Pulastya Muni, Pulaha Muni, Kratu, the Pachetas in Daksha, Angiras, Vashishta, and Bhrigu Muni, and Narada is the tenth, who was the carrier of bhakti and the giver of bhakti, Narada, the giver of bhakti to mankind. So they perform sacrifices, influenced by Lord Brahma, following Lord Brahma, to satisfy both the manifested and non-manifested personalities. Prabhupada's purport explained, what are these manifested and non-manifested personalities that are described in the verse? The manifested personalities are the demigods, like the ruler of the heavenly kingdom, Indra and his associates. And the non-manifested personality is the Lord himself. The manifested personalities are mundane controllers of the material affairs, whereas the non-manifested personality of Godhead is transcendental, beyond the range of the material atmosphere. In this age of Kali, the manifested demigods are also not to be seen, for space travel has completely stopped. So the manifested demigods are also unmanifest now. And the Lord, who is the unmanifested personality, who is beyond our vision, our ability to see, unless we have bhakti, so both of them are now unmanifested. So both the powerful demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are non-manifested to the covered eyes of the modern man. Modern men want to see everything with their eyes, although they are not sufficiently qualified. Consequently, they disbelieve in the existence of the demigods or of the Supreme God. Very interesting. It's very hard for someone who is brought up in through the modern educational system to accept the existence of demigods. But what day was yesterday? Saturday, yes. What other day was it? Or we could say, what was the date? The 12th. And what other day was it? It was Durga Puja. And when a few weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, Subal was telling me that on Durga Puja, maybe it will rain, but there'll be a storm or something like that. Why? Because Durga comes on, he explained to me, there's different, according to the particular time, and you can figure it out by Jyotish, that Durga rides on different vehicles or whatever. So she comes, and this time, every year, it's a different being that she comes on, because she's called from the Himalayan mountains by the devotees to go to different places during Durga Puja, and she stays for 4 days. So this year, she comes on a horse, and when the horse comes, it raises so much dust. So he was telling me this for weeks, and I was thinking, oh, very nice mythology. But yesterday I became a worshiper. It was such a brilliant storm, too. It was so exciting, yes? Yes, it was really, the wind was going and the lightning was flashing. Mother Durga had come on her horse. What can I say? And the dust was there. And he told me also that it rained in his part of Vrindavan, where he lives, but it didn't rain here. It did rain, yes? Oh. You were timing it. Because he said, when Radhastami comes, it doesn't rain after that, except for Durga Puja. Then it can rain. So these are very, very subtle. One time, Prabhupada gave class in the Melbourne Temple. And he was talking about giant eagles that fly from planet to planet and that they can pick up and eat elephants. So all the devotees, and he was sitting on the Vyasa, and Prabhupada would speak so strongly and with such deep conviction. This is described in the Bhagavatam. So all the devotees, I don't know what they were thinking, but I know what I was thinking. Why don't we talk about something else, you know, that we're not our body, or even Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is easier to accept. So at the end of class, Prabhupada said, any questions? So one devotee, disciple of Prabhupada, raised his hand. Very meekly said, in your class you spoke about giant eagles that fly from planet to planet. It is hard to believe. Prabhupada was so heavy. He said, what do you know? You are still within the womb of your mother. That's all he said. And really, this is the truth. What do we know? We have our arrogance. We have our pride. But what do we actually know? What do we know about demigods, higher planets, subtle realms? Very hard to understand these things. Impossible through the sense, or especially the eye-oriented, materialistically educated mind, very hard to understand. Because we want to see everything, but we don't have qualifications to see. We don't have the subtleties of consciousness to see. And therefore we think, we don't believe in this. We think, I can't see God. I remember when in 1956, Yuri Gagarin, yes? 56? 61. When he went up into space because he was a good communist atheist, his comment was, "I did not see God there." And so what? You didn't. He was thinking about him, but not with devotion. Kamsa was also thinking about him. Preman, so Prabhupada continues, "Consequently, modern men want to see everything with their eyes, although they are not sufficiently qualified. Consequently, they disbelieve in the existence of the demigods or of the Supreme God. They should see through the pages of authentic scriptures and should not simply believe their unqualified eyes. Even in these days, God can also be seen by qualified eyes tinged with the ointment of love of God." So that is what we want. Really, that is what we want. What is the verse in the Brahma Samhita? Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva ridyeshu valokayanti yam shyama sundaram achintya guna rupam govindam hari purusham tamaham. So when the eyes are tinged with prem, not only do we see God once, but we see Him everywhere. And there is no time that one whose eyes are tinged with prem, there's no time they don't see Krishna. So this is wonderful. And the wonderfulness of prem is very secret. And that is going to be described in the 9th chapter. The most secret thing, the great rahasya of prema bhakti, that can make Krishna appear before one's vision continuously. And this will be described in the 3rd of the Chatusloka Bhagavatam verses, which we will, Krishna willing, complete before the end of the course. Prema pamarto mahan. Even in these days, that is like a promise to us from the disciplic succession through the words of Prabhupada, from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even in these days, God can also be seen by qualified eyes tinged with the ointment of love of God. Text 30. Thereafter, the Manus, the fathers of mankind, the great sages, the forefathers, the learned scholars, the daityas, and mankind perform sacrifices meant to please the Supreme Lord. Very interesting, Prabhupada's purport here. The daityas are devotees of the demigods because they want to derive the greatest possible material facilities from them. The devotees of the Lord are ekanishta. That means they're fixed in one thing only, or absolutely attached to the devotional service of the Lord. Listen to this next line. Therefore, they have practically no time to seek the benefits of material facilities. Because of their realization of their spiritual identity, they are more concerned with spiritual emancipation than with material comforts. So even if the desires for material comforts are present, and naturally they'll be present within everyone in the material world to one degree or another, but that a devotee who is ekanishtha will forsake those, sacrifice those for a different purpose, for a higher purpose, despite their presence. And then That is sacrifice. And someone sent me a wonderful part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Raise your hand if you have a copy of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Very, very wonderful, this publication. You have it yet? In the library, it's there. And the library is open, too, if you want to see it. But there was one section. I should have brought it. Because I won't be able to do it justice by paraphrasing it. But how Krishna is pleased, I won't be able to find it either because the devotee sent it to me and he typed it out. He was so excited, the devotee in Melbourne. He read this, he came across this, and he was so excited that he just sent it to me. He said that that Krishna is more pleased with the devotees, the sadhakas, who have come to him, who are coming to him, because it's such a struggle in the material world. So he is sympathetic to the struggle and the difficulties that the devotees go through to please him. Because along with this tendency and the purpose of the material world to be sacrificed for Krishna's pleasure with devotion, there is another tendency that the conditioned souls have, and that is to use the material world for their own pleasure. So that has to be struggled against. And Krishna is not blind to the struggles that the devotees go through, but rather he sees how sincere they are in this struggle. But it's good to keep that in mind because it is a struggle to be a sadhaka in the material world, not having achieved bhava. But it is the only noble struggle. Srila Jiva Goswami commented on one of the earlier verses that what is the use of achieving these other things? They are temporary. So simply he said it. They're temporary. You'll get them and they'll go. What is the use of striving for these things? This is the message of the Bhagavatam. This is the message of all the great teachers. This is the message of the whole Vedic culture, really. Text 31. They are more concerned with spiritual emancipation, with material comforts. Text 31. Narayana Bhagavati Taridam Vishwamahitam Guhitam Mayoru Guna Sagadav Aguna Svata. All the material manifestations of the universe are therefore situated in his powerful material energies, which he accepts self-sufficiently. That he's not depending upon them. They're all situated in him. They are depending in him, but he is not dependent on anything else. Janmadyasya yattaha. Although he is eternally without affinity for the material modes, he is transcendental. He is above. So this is how Brahma is describing this Supreme Lord. And he wishes to make sacrifices to him. So the question was asked by Narada in 252, second verse. My dear father, please describe factually the symptoms of the manifest world. What is its background? What is behind this? What is holding it up? How is it created? So all this has been described. How is it conserved? How is it maintained? And under whose control is all this being done? So he has clearly explained everything. Prabhupada's purport to 31. The question put by Narada before Brahma concerning the sustenance of the material creation is thus answered. Material actions and reactions, as the material scientists can superficially observe, are not basically ultimate truth in regard to creation, maintenance, and destruction. This is the law of causation. Everything is dependent on something else. The material energy is a potency of the Lord, which is displayed in time, accepting the three qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance in the forms of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. The material energy thus works under the supreme spell of his lordship, although he is always transcendental to such material activities. A rich man constructs a big house by spending his energy in the shape of resources, and similarly he destroys a big house by his resources. But the maintenance is always under his personal care. The Lord is the richest of the rich because he is always fully complete in six opulences. Therefore, he is not required to do anything personally, but everything in the material world is carried out by his wishes and directions. Therefore, the entire material manifestation is situated in Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal conception of the Supreme Truth is due to lack of knowledge only, and this fact is clearly explained by Brahmaji, who is supposed to be the creator of the universal affairs. Brahmaji is the highest authority in Vedic wisdom, and his assertion in this connection is therefore the supreme information. Text 32. The next to last verse we'll read. By his will, because Narada was confused, who is actually the supreme power? You appear so powerful. And Brahmaji, without pretension, has made it clear, and now he will summarize. By his will, I create. Lord Shiva destroys. And he himself, in his eternal form as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. My dear son, whatever you inquired from me, I have thus explained to you, and you must know for certain that whatever there is, either as cause or effect, both in the material and spiritual worlds, is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's purport to this final verse in this section, 33. The complete cosmic situation, both in the material and the spiritual manifestations of the energies of the Lord, is working and moving first as the cause and then as the effect. But the original cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what is being established. Who God is, how powerful he is, who is the controller. And then with that information, that is not all. We must understand our relationship with him and then how to act. All these will be described. But now, Brahma is establishing who the Lord is, who the background is. Effects of the original cause become the causes of other effects, and thus everything, either permanent or temporary, is working as cause and effect. Just like if I move this. So my movement was the cause of the bead bags being lifted, and the effect was the sound, ultimately, of the bead bag falling. So the cause, the bead bag falling, later became the cause of another effect. So in this way, the material world is continuously moving with cause and effects. And if we trace whatever effects exist now back to the very beginning, what is causing everything, he who himself has no cause, that is the definition of God. Janmad yasyataha, sava karana karanam. And Prabhupada will quote that Brahma Samhita verse. And because the Lord is the primeval cause of all persons and all energies, he is called the cause of all causes, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita as well as in the Bhagavad Gita. What is the Bhagavad Gita verse that says that he is the cause of all causes? Mataksavambha. Brahma Samhita confirms or affirms Ishwara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adi Govinda Sarvakarna Karanam. And in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8 it is said by Krishna himself, Aham Savasya Prabhavo Mataksavam Pravatate Iti Matva Bhajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samanvita. So the original primeval cause is vigraha, the personal. And the impersonal spiritual effulgence, Brahmajyoti, is also an effect of the Supreme Brahman, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, Lord Krishna. So this is what Brahma is establishing here, for Narada's benefit and for ours. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Questions, comments? Thank you. No. Exalted devotees under the influence of yoga maya forget Krishna's greatness, but it's still there, but by yoga maya causes them to forget it. Like when Mother Yasoda, when she asked Krishna if he had eaten dirt, and he said, if you think I may have eaten dirt, then I'll open my mouth, you can see. So he opened his mouth, and Mother Yasoda saw within his mouth the universal form. He saw everything, including herself. But her affection for Krishna was so great, and by the influence of yoga maya, that realization, because it would have interfered with her loving relationship with Krishna's mother, was covered by yoga maya. But she didn't think, oh, I shouldn't be thinking about this now. So it's not that we have to forget it, Krishna's position. When we have love for Krishna, and we're deeply influenced by yoga maya, then that will come naturally when we're in our relationship with Krishna. When it stands in the way of our service to Krishna, as Mother Yasoda had to serve Krishna. And one of the Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Bhajan Rahasya, one of the things that make us durdaiva midri samihan anujanuraga, unfortunate and not be able to chant with taste, is tattva vibrahma, not understanding what the truth is. There are other things, but that's one of them. What sambandha jnana, etc. is. But if one doesn't understand that God is God, there's no question of developing spontaneous attraction. You have to. How could you surrender? How would one become fearless? So we take things in an order, in steps. Yoga maya. Yeah, and even the residents of Vrindavan, they knew Krishna's position, and it sometimes came to the surface. But when it interfered with their loving him in a mood, in their service, then Krishna would take that, Yogamaya takes that away. That removes your anxiety that you... Understand tattva. No one says that. People will say that you shouldn't remain only understanding this. You should move from the second, get purified, move from the first canto to the second canto, to the third canto, the fourth canto, fifth canto, and you should move onward and understand and come to the point of understanding Vrindavan. That devotee will say, but no one will say that you shouldn't understand that Krishna is God. Then you end up like that Christian fellow in Bangladesh who told me, how could your God be dancing with the wives of so many others? How can you worship someone who is so immoral? What together with others? Chanting? You mean chanting japa or? I never heard that specifically said. That in a comparison with Satyuga and we should. But the reason why people should chant japa together is clear. What is the reason? At 5:15 in the morning, what's the reason? Everyone knows. Yes, you, why? To help us keep awake and attentive. But I've never heard it specifically said that we have to all chant together. Because I don't chant with anyone other than I chant in front of my deities early in the morning. But if you have a particular order like that, if you have a particular order like that from maybe your guru or something, I don't know. But this practical reason, it's not a philosophical point that I know. But Sankirtan means congregational chanting of the holy names. So, yeah, so we sing Hare Krishna together and we support try to spread the Sankirtan movement, which is also Sankirtan. Is that all right? Or does that lead to another question? Yeah, just one, maybe one at a time, or we'll come back if there's more time. Yes, Madhu. I'm sorry, I can't hear. You have to yes. They're extraordinary ingredients. So wonderful. Mataji asked if since everything is made for sacrifice, and everything in existence in the material world is made to be offered to the Lord, or the prayers to the Goswamis suitable to be also used as sacrifice and recited for the Lord's pleasure. So my response is those ingredients are extraordinary. But we should do it for His pleasure. Everything should be done for His pleasure. Any other? Vibhrama, yeah. It means ignorance, basically, vibhrama, or illusion or ignorance about what the tattva, which means about our relation, about Krishna, who Krishna is, that's one, who we are, what is the process of devotional service, these are the, and there's one more, and about the material world, these are the things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says can be a cause of our unfortunateness. The others are asatrishna, a thirst for, a taste for the temporary, material things. Another is aparad, and each of these have four different parts. And the fourth one is hridaya dolabam, weakness of heart. Bhajan Rahasya, which is basically one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentaries on Shikshastakam. The Shikshastak basically comments on it. There. And that he's also written another commentary on the Shikshastak also. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. What's his problem? That was his problem. That he couldn't. It's very hard, it's very rare that someone can accept this, that God is a person. If you look at the religions of the world, look at the spiritual movements, how many of them are truly personalist that accept that the Supreme is a person? Because it's hard to understand. Why is it hard to understand? Because we've mentioned this so many times before, because as soon as you say person, that implies specific characteristics. So if he has form and characteristics and a nature, that appears to limit him. Because if he likes peacock feathers, that means he doesn't like crow feathers and pigeon feathers. So how can he be unlimited, all-inclusive? If he has a form and he has arms and legs, that means how can he be everywhere? So that appears to limit him. So that is really taking the material finite conception of form and which we have in our mind and placing it upon him. So he has form, but it's unlike any form that we can conceive of. It's inconceivable. He's in one place, yet he's everywhere simultaneously through his energies. An unlimited form. So the material mind cannot accept this. The finite mind cannot accept it. Why? Because it's not rational. But we shouldn't say it's irrational. We should say it's inconceivable. Achintya. Achintya Veda Veda. Is that very, very hard for people to accept and understand? It's super soul. 10. It's not 9. Not more than, I think it says. Yeah. Proportionate to the body. Size. Actual presence in the heart. It's also explained in the second chapter of the second canto, I believe. Yeah, difference between here and here or something. Yes, but we just heard how even though the whole universe is situated within him, it's all within that. So therefore, we can understand that he has an unlimited form. So can you conceive of an unlimited form? No, by definition, you can't. And therefore, Brahma, in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, he says this, even though I'm so powerful, the difference between your form, the potency of your form and the potency of my form, I cannot even estimate. So many Vishnus are coming from him. So many universes are coming from him. And yet he's not diminished at all. He's not lessened at all. And he's walking around Vrindavan without shoes, herding cows, and we ask, what is the problem that the scientist has in accepting this? Even it's not only that, but he's walking around without shoes on. Everyone walks around with shoes, unless you come from a village. And he was born in prison. Kunti Devi was saying this in the 8th chapter of the first canto. How is the unborn taken his birth? How could he, that's what Prabhupada, he was telling the, in Melbourne, he was telling the scientists, these professors, that that is the definition of God. He who has no parents. You find everyone else comes from somewhere. He is independent. But then, if he would have said, well, what about Devaki and Vasudev? Those are his parents. Well, this is how Kunti Devi was amazed. How has the unborn taken his birth? It's so wonderful. Sambhavam yatma mayaya. By his own internal energy, he does as he likes, for his pleasure. So when we become in harmony with his pleasure, then we are in our natural position. But last question, though, because it's already 1:30. Well, then we've gone over our head. If that's how hearing Krishna's pastimes affects us, then we should be hearing something on a lower level. So therefore, the Bhagavatam has canto 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. First we hear how he lifts the earth from the Garbhodak ocean, how he kills Lord Nisringadev, how he appears as Lord Ram, getting closer to the 10th canto. So if we're forgetting that he's God, but don't, and it isn't Yogamaya acting, so therefore we should just drop our level a few cantos. We should start from the beginning. The general practice is study Bhagavad Gita, then we study the Bhagavatam from the beginning. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Oh.